Hello and welcome to From Stress to Success, Exploding the Seven Myths of Stress. My name is Gordon Young. I am a clinical hypnotherapist, psychotherapist, and executive coach. I am currently the president of the Australian Board of Neurolinguistic Programming and the vice president of the Australian Society of Clinical Hypnotherapists. I run a clinic on the Northern Beaches called the Mondo Clinic, and do a considerable amount of training in the area for those therapists and coaches who are looking for new ways of dealing with their own and their clients' personal and professional issues. Years of experience in dealing with things like anxiety disorder, general stress conditions, depression, these sorts of issues that are so common in the Western world, have shown me that traditional approaches simply don't work. And they do not work because there are a number of myths around the nature of stress and how to deal with it. And in this short presentation, I will do what I can to share with you what is effectively an evolutionary approach to stress. Probably my greatest expertise in stress comes from the fact that I used to do stress very, very well. I ran a business at one stage that had, at any given time, maybe 35 people. I had hundreds of thousands of dollars in outstanding accounts at any given time, hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of stock, and also guarantees on rental agreements, and so it goes on. It's the typical stuff you have as a small to medium-sized business person. I was so stressed at one point that my blood pressure was 180 over 140. That, for those of you who do not understand those figures, is dangerously high. In fact, the doctors told me that I would be dead by 40 if I didn't change what I was doing. And so I didn't learn this new approach just because I was interested. I learned it because I had to, because stress is a primary killer in this community. It's not just a source of discomfort. It's not just an inconvenience. It kills. It is, in actual fact, the only common denominator in the five main reasons why you will die in the Western world. And because of that, I consider this to be a very important subject, one that most people deny or distort or just put to a side because they don't want to deal with it. If you're listening to this CD now, it means you are recognizing the importance of this. Hopefully, by the end of this short hour that we have together, you'll have a new understanding and you'll know what to do about this, and so you can take charge of your life. What I want to do today is share with you a very different approach. What if stress was a choice? Because in this community, what we often see so much is that people believe that it is not a choice. It is a natural consequence of being out there and being active. I would say to you that not being able to deal with stress levels will be a significant factor in people not achieving their full potential. How can you take risk if you can't deal with the consequence of taking risk? How do you deal with a promotion when a huge part of you feels totally overwhelmed with the workload you have now? What I'm here to tell you is that stress, particularly the more crisis stress that so many people experience on a weekly basis, is absolutely a choice. If you were to know this deep at your core, how valuable would that be to you? Would you be open to the possibility that this were true and shelve your current beliefs around stress? Would you actively participate and look for ways in which this might work? If you were to take this on board, your life could be, because I don't know where you are now, but could be significantly happier. You could have some quiet inside your head. You know, one thing I encounter so often is that people just want that sense of peace internally. The voice inside their head is always going so quickly and is so demanding and so critical often. A sense of peace would be yours. and you could do it in minutes. You wouldn't have to go to an ashram for 10 days and not speak and meditate for 10 days before you could get something approximating internal peace. You could have it in minutes. Would that be valuable to you? Is it worth your time to listen? If that's the case, then one thing that we need to recognize is that if one person can do something, then it's humanly possible for another to do it as well. Not everyone deals with stress the same way. We are the result of all of our conscious and our unconscious choices. What I would say to you is if you start off with a premise taken from the words of Mahatma Gandhi, every human being is the center of a circle that knows no circumference. The only circumference ever created is born from fear. Fear and stress are synonymous. They are the same thing. So often I'll talk to executives that I'm coaching who simply will refuse to acknowledge that they are scared of anything, and yet they are highly stressed. Well, the truth is, the stress response is the fear response. There is no difference. When you go into a stress response, you do that because you are threatened. You feel threatened. So let's really look at what stress really is. If you look around us, stress is all around us. They say that 10% of our community is dangerously overstressed. And despite the literature, very few people know anything very much about stress or how to cope with it. What I would say to you is that stress is an internal physiological reaction to a perceived threat. A perceived threat. Because it may not be a real threat in this modern community. There are all sorts of biochemical changes because the stress response is the flight or fight response. It is a physiological process. There are biochemical changes. For instance, you have things like adrenaline pumped through the system. You have things like cortisol pumped into the mind. There's an increase in heart rate, a tightening of muscles. Cholesterol is released into the bloodstream. Blood flow shifts from the organs and moves to the extremes, to the major muscles. Because the whole point of this fight or flight response is to get you active, to get you to actually fight something or run away from something. So particularly things like the thigh muscles are pumped with blood. And where blood flows, energy goes. You suppress in the stress response all things that are not important at that point in time. For instance, I mean, it really is a 30,000-year-old process. It is a very basic process, and everyone from every human being through to zebras and other mammals have the same response. If you look at what happens in the stress response, everything that is not important to you if you are being chased by a saber-toothed tiger is suppressed because you have to use all the energy you have in the system to get away from the threat. Things like your digestive system are shut down. Why? You simply don't have to worry about what you had for lunch in order to get away from a saber-toothed tiger. Sexual function is suppressed because obviously that's something you don't need to worry about or you're being chased by a saber-toothed tiger. Your immune system, you have to worry about bacteria. You've got much bigger concerns when you've been chased by a saber-toothed tiger, and your problem-solving ability drops because the truth is you don't need to work out a mathematical problem when you've been chased by a saber-toothed tiger. It is a physiological response to a perceived threat. Now, the truth is, very few of us are chased by a saber-toothed tiger these days. And as a result, I would put to you that the stress response, which is effectively there to get you away from a physical threat, is largely out of date in the modern world because most of our threats now are psychological. They are threats to our ego, threats to our position, our status, our livelihood. If you think about the workplace, what are the threats truly? Are you on a daily basis being threatened physically? For most of you, the answer is no. So a stress response is actually a relatively ineffective response in the modern world. And They say there's a lag time of about 30,000 years in evolution. That is to say, if you look at the lifestyle we have now, compared to even 50 years ago, to a generation or two generations ago, it's very different. Men do very little physical work today, on average, compared to 50 years ago. Everything is very, very different. If you go back 100 years, even more so. Our systems are not keeping up to date with our rapidly changing lifestyle. And therein lies the problem. So, what do we do about this? Well, the other thing we need to decide is that there's two types of stress. There's the acute stress, that major reaction to an external event, which we feel like we're out of control with. And then there's the chronic stress. That's the constant level that we often get used to because we're so familiar with it. We think it's just where we are. If you go to a masseuse or an osteopath or chiropractor, you probably find that if you're stressed, they can tell. They can tell through the musculature in your back that you are holding tension in the body that you're probably not even aware of. Effectively, stress is chemistry. So there are over 1,500 chemical changes when you get stressed. These stress hormones are not good for the system. They are designed to override the entire system. Why? Because if you're being chased by a saber-toothed tiger and the tiger takes a piece out of the back of your thigh, adrenaline pumping through your system will help you keep going and get up the tree or get it wherever you need to get away from that tiger. You may not be able to walk for the next 3 months, but that point in time, you'll keep going. You'll hear stories of mothers lifting cars off children because the adrenaline pumping through the system gives them strength and capacity they don't normally have. It is a very short-term and highly effective response in that circumstance. Having said that, one of the problems we have is that we tend to drip feed that response through the system constantly. And because it suppresses all the other systems, it overrides all the other systems, this is why we get sick. This is why some people get colds and flu constantly throughout the winter. This is why some people get cancers and tumors. If you look at the research, it's increasingly being shown there are links between stress and stress-related activity and things like cancers and tumors. When we look at stress for what it really is, it is such a major problem in this community. Over 80% of illness, there is a stress factor involved. It costs country over $160 million in lost productivity annually alone. Depression, which is linked to stress, looks like it may be the single largest burden on Medicare within 10 years. It also creates poor staff retention, productivity shortfalls, and major job dissatisfaction. And there's an incalculable loss or cost to business because of poor judgment caused by overly stressed employees. If you look at your own experience, what's the cost of stress to you? In a personal sense, does it affect your relationship? Does it affect your family? Does it affect your health? If you're not digesting properly, of course you might put on weight. If you're not dealing with the immune system, your immune system is not sufficiently resourced, of course you can get sick regularly. You know you don't catch colds or flu. These things are called opportunist bacteria. They are in the system constantly. It's only when your immune system is down that they can take hold. Things like ulcers, irritable bowel syndrome, digestive problems, these are caused because over 80% of your stress receptors are in your gut. All sorts of back and neck problems are also linked to the conditions that are created through the stress response. And of course, you age prematurely. It's a high energy sapping response and totally unnecessary the way that we use it. It can create concentration problems, nervous disorders, all the way right through to chronic fatigue. And there's a very clear link between that and chronic heart or cardiovascular disease. It's also a major contributor to things like suicide, road accidents, marriage breakdowns, stroke. Pretty well everything at the top of the tree in health-related illness is stress-related. So what causes stress? Well, for most people, people will say that stress is caused by external events, external factors. People will say my stressors are my partner, my job, my boss, my children, finances, the weather, the economy, these sorts of things. The truth is, these are external factors, and when we say that our stressors are external to us, it actually disempowers us. Stress is an internal response to a perceived threat. A perceived threat. And whilst you allocate blame for your stress level external to you, there's not a lot you can do. I mean, if it is your partner or if it is your children, what are you going to do? How can you change that? Standard stress management responses would say you need to get rid of your stressors out of your life. What if it's your parents? What if it's your kids? This is not very empowering. So there's another way. If you look at truth, what stress is, it's fear, as I've already said. The difference between us and, say, a zebra is that we have an imagination. We fear things like loss, rejection, failure. We fear the unknown. We fear making a mistake. We fear that we won't be in control. There are so many things we fear, and we can get very overwhelmed very, very quickly. And we do that because we run things through our head. Stay with me for a moment. If you look at a zebra being attacked by a lion, the moment the zebra sees the lion, it goes into the stress response. The physiological response takes over. Blood is pushed into the muscles of the legs in particular. The zebra takes off. As it gets away from the lion gives up the chase, it goes back to the herd and just continues on the way it did before. See, the zebra doesn't have an imagination. The zebra doesn't go back to the other zebras and say, "Oh my God, what would have happened there? Can you imagine being pulled apart alive by all these lions? Can you imagine how painful that would have been? Can you imagine what would have had to my little baby? What, you know, what, that would have been awful." It doesn't do that. It goes back and starts grazing again. And as a result, it doesn't suffer the problem over and over again. You probably have the experience where you might have had a 2-minute argument, and for 3 days, a week afterwards, you're still running that through your head. You've actually occupied hours of your time going over the same problem. And here's the other element about perception. One thing that most people do not understand is their imagination is just as real to their mind as the real world is. So do this for a moment, just to see. If you were to imagine that wherever you are, wherever you've just been, that there was actually a clown in that place you were just a moment ago. So if I was to ask you, did you see that clown? Now, you may say there wasn't a clown where I just was. Having said that, you have a clown inside your head now, don't you? Because just to process what I'm saying, you have to picture it. That's the way your mind works. Now, here's the question. Does the clown and the surroundings, is that image that you're running in your head now distinctly different from the reality of that place you were just in? If it was a room, does the room look different from where it normally does? Or did you just splice in, using the imagination you have, did you just splice in the clown into a very realistic space, the way it always was? Now, for most people, that would be the answer. That's exactly what you did. Because your imagination is more powerful. In fact, it's actually more real to you than the reality external to you. In fact, you can go into a stress response now by me just talking to you. If we, for instance, I was to tell you there was a large boa constrictor just behind you, and its tongue was just flicking in and out as it came back over the back of your shoulder. If you were to stop for a moment, how many of you started to go into a few of the symptoms of a stress response? Some of you would have started to feel a bit of an energy shift. Some of you, your heart rate might have started to increase. All sorts of things typically happen when I do that in a group. And yet you absolutely know that it was not there. But the difference was you had to picture it as I said it. That's the difference. You had to picture it as I said it. And because of that, your imagination took hold. It saw the snake as real, and so responded to it. And I could have kept going with that. I choose not to because it's a recording. But I could have kept going with that until every person in the room, potentially, has a major stress response. You'll actually get people, when you do that in a room, start looking around because the image inside their head is so real to them. And speaking of snakes, I see stress as being something like a rattlesnake. It gives you fair warning. The symptoms are there. It gives you fair warning that you ignore at your peril. The way most people deal with stress is they do ignore it. They avoid what they perceive to be their stressors. A lot of the time they simply can't do it because they're people close to us or they're a job that they need to be in. They try to distract themselves by throwing themselves into other things. This is where aholics come from. They try and do a little bit of relaxation, maybe a little bit of meditation. That's a good thing. It often still does not deal with the stress problem, or they use drugs and alcohol. You know, a corkscrew is the primary tool for stress relief in this community. There are other ways, because none of those things has a long-term effect. And to understand how we need to deal with stress, we need to look at what the myths of stress are. The first myth is that the only way to avoid stress is to avoid your stressors. I remember having someone that I trained in NLP, who's a very senior manager, say that they had a stress management expert supposedly come in and say that the best thing you can do when you're stressed is go for a bike ride. And she very politely asked, "What would I do if I'm about to go into a meeting?" He said, "You have to find time to go for that bike ride." Now, I don't know about you, but I don't really understand that. Stressors are not external to you. If you think about what causes stress, it is your thoughts. Let's say, for instance, go back to a personal experience. Let's say you're a parent and your child is out past their curfew. Their curfew was 10 o'clock, they're not home at 12. What do most parents do? They start to panic. Why? Because what they're running through their head is not their child just being a little bit late. They can freely run the idea that their child has had an accident. They can see in their mind's eye the child bleeding and maybe being wheeled into a hospital. They let their imagination run all these negative scenarios. Now, the truth is, none of that has actually happened. And in 99% of the cases, or 99% of the things that we stress about, never actually happen. We are putting that snake inside our own head. We look for the worst case scenarios. If you imagine your child to be in a car accident, of course you're going to stress out. If you recognize that the child is late, but the truth is you don't know where the child is or what's happening, the truth is the more stressed you are, it doesn't change the situation. What it does is give you enormous relief when the child comes home, because there's that contradiction. But the truth is, the amount of stress that you had leading up to the child returning does not improve the situation. So, perception is everything. If someone were to imagine that their child might be late because they weren't really in control of who was driving home at a particular time, which is often the sort of thing that happens, then would you do stress the same way? You may not be happy that the child has put themselves in a position where they're not able to get home exactly the time you asked them to, but you won't be doing the stress in the same way. And following on from that, the idea that stress is caused by the event, by something that happens. This is linked to the first myth. If I took 100 people and gave them the same task to do with a particular deadline, how many stress levels do you think I would get? If you say 100, then you're right. We'd get 100 different stress levels because everyone will have an individual response to that deadline. There is a considerable difference between stress and pressure. Pressure is the deadline. Pressure is the external event. How you deal with it will determine your stress level. If you find yourself struggling with dealing with budgets in the thousands or tens of thousands, how do people do it in the millions? How does someone like Richard Branson do it in the billions? If you go into overwhelm because you can't balance your budget, what happens where people have life and death issues on a daily basis? How does some young kid from Arkansas stand on a roadblock in Baghdad where any car that stops could be the last thing he sees? How does he do that? And of course the answer is, he's learnt a way of coping with it. He's learnt a way of dealing with the pressure. And the pressure does not equal stress. Now think about it. If stress was in the event, how could we have people like emergency services, search and rescue? How would we have people able to operate effectively in an emergency casualty ward? How does anyone do that? Imagine a heart surgeon. Delicate operation. A whole family of people outside, dependent on you. Their loved one will live or die because of what you do. How can you do that? How do you cope with that if stress is in the actual event, in the situation? How do you cope with that? How would you cope with the pressure of knowing that if you make a mistake, you're going to have to go out there and tell a whole lot of people that the person they love is no more? How do you do that? How does anyone do that? Of course, the short answer is it's not in the event. It's in what you do to yourself. If you think about those consequences regularly, you couldn't be a surgeon. My guess is the average surgeon, or certainly the very good ones, would be focusing on their ability to help people. They'll be focusing on what they can do, not what they cannot do. Coming back to the Holmes-Rae chart, the scale, the way of measuring stressful events, if we take divorce as an example, 200 points for a divorce, how can that be? Surely at least one of these people initiated this divorce. They say that stress is beyond our control without drugs. Well, you know, doctors will say, have you been under stress lately, as if it's an external thing to you. It's not external to you. You actually create it. And you can easily control it. The truth is you give away your power when you allocate blame for your stress external to you. If you say, my boss is the reason why I'm so stressed, what can you do about it? You've just given all your power to your boss, or your children, or your spouse, or whoever else that you allocate responsibility for the problem. Because responsibility is truthfully your ability to respond. If you become responsible, then you can do something about your stress level. Another thing I encounter frequently is that people believe that stress is important from a performance perspective. People say, I function better, I'm more alert, I'm more motivated. Well, the truth is, most people who motivate themselves out of stress only receive inconsistent results. You can either motivate yourself out of pleasure or pain. They're the two driving forces of our lives. We tend to move towards pain, away from pain and towards pleasure. Behaviorally, we will do more to avoid pain than we will do to gain pleasure. But the truth is, most of us spend most of our time in avoidance. We look at what we don't want. If you ask people what they want in their life, they often don't know, but they know what they don't want. If you say things like, I don't want another person like that, the truth is all you're giving your mind a reference point for is another person like that. Procrastination is a very good example of motivating yourself out of pain. So for instance, if you have something to do, and let's say it's a Tuesday, and you have to have it done by Friday afternoon. Wednesday goes by, oh, I've just still got another day before I need to do it. Thursday, oh, I don't really feel like doing it yet. Friday lunchtime comes and suddenly it's more painful not to do it than it was to do it. Because now you're really under pressure. You've put yourself under pressure by leaving it to the last minute. You get the work done, you get a huge sense of relief. The trouble is your brain then tends to say, wow, you work better under stress. The idea that performance and stress levels are linked is erroneous. If you look at, say, Olympic athletes, what's the difference between a gold medal performance and coming fourth? Is it that these people are so much better? If you take swimming, it's fractions of a second. If you talk about, say, ski jumpers, the ones who do the acrobatics, it's that slight rotation that meant that they didn't land quite right. Stress levels will affect your performance. If you see someone crash after doing a triple somersault on one of these snow ski competitions, do you think they just pulled that jump out that time? They thought, I'll just give it a go. No, they've practiced that thousands of times. In practice where there was no pressure, where there was nothing on the line, they did it easily. The moment there's something on the line, they tightened up just that little bit. And it's the person who doesn't tighten up is the one who win. If you think about the concept of a boardwalk, let's say you've got a piece of board, I don't know, 40, 50 centimeters wide, say, you know, a foot in the old scale, a foot wide. If it was lying on the ground, could you walk along that board without touching the ground? For most people, the answer is obviously yes. What if that board was, say, half a meter off the ground? The answer would still be yes. A meter? Yes. 5 meters. Now people would start to struggle a little bit. It would be perceived as more difficult, and yet the truth is the actual task itself is no more difficult. The difference is your perception of it. Put it 20 meters in the air. Put it 4 stories up. Who's going to walk across that board now? Now the truth is, it is no more difficult. But your fear of what will happen if you make a mistake kicks in. Suddenly that is a much more difficult task. But it's only perception. And a way of us challenging that would be, let's say for instance it's 4 stories up and it's between 2 buildings. Would you walk across it? And for what? Would you walk across it for $100? For $1,000? For $10,000? Would you walk across it if the other building was on fire and your child was trapped on the roof of that other building? For most people, the answer is unequivocally yes, because perception has changed. What you will lose by not going across is significantly greater than what you might lose by going across. It's only about perception. It does not improve physical performance. It makes you tighten up. In actual fact, cortisol, one of the main stress hormones, is now being well researched. It's pretty clear that people tend to make more mistakes the more cortisol's in the system. Why? Because you're not meant to be thinking out a complex problem when you're stressed. You're meant to be getting away from a ferocious animal or some other physical threat. It is not designed for you to come up with a problem-solving device. In actual fact, if you look at some of the biggest, greatest inventions of all time, they haven't come to the inventor during a period of him stressing out about something and trying to work it out in the laboratory. It's come in the middle of the night. It's come at 3 a.m. when they've relaxed, when they're trying to think about something else. You probably have the experience of trying to remember someone's name and not being able to remember and think, oh my God, what's his name? Oh. And then you forget about it. You leave it for a while. You just walk away. You're doing other things. And suddenly you got the name up. John. I don't know where that came from, but your unconscious mind was given a task. And in the absence of fear or stress, it was able to do what it did. Stress is not a contributor to performance. Having a problem is the key to you getting motivated. E.g., you require pressure. How often will you strive if there's no pressure? In actual fact, what you are doing is you have to have a problem in your life before you do something. As a result, you will tend to be inconsistent in your results and you'll yo-yo. The weight loss industry is a very good example of this. People take a photograph of themselves at the beginning, they go to one of these weight loss centers, and they know what they don't want to look like anymore. And they shed the weight. They start working well, they're on a decent diet, they might lose 2 to 5 kilos, something like that, and then they reward themselves. Oh, well, you know, I've done well. And they start eating again. It might be just a piece of chocolate cake, and then that afternoon, that night's followed up by something else they shouldn't eat. And so it goes on, and there's this reward for them getting some sort of result, but ultimately that tends to pull them back, because if your motivation point is, I don't want to look like this, the moment you stop looking like that, you don't have the same level of motivation. Same with the procrastination. The moment you become comfortable with what you've done, you don't tend to work again. So you have to keep making yourself uncomfortable to actually achieve. That's not a very good way of doing this. What if you were to think about it from a different perspective? What if you were to motivate yourself by saying, I want to achieve this because of all the benefits I will get out of it, and focus on the benefits of actually doing that job and not waiting until Friday to do it? That is true motivation. That's inspiration for oneself. And that would be a very different way of motivating yourself. And the truth is, if you look at the times when you've done really, really well with something, you ever been in the zone, what they refer to as the zone, where a whole day's work was achieved by 11 o'clock? Or when, you say, in a sporting realm, which is something I've been very familiar with, where everything just flowed easily and you couldn't believe the things you did. Your skills were magnified. Everything was so easy. Were you just a little bit on the edge of stress at that point in time? Because that's the theory. The theory is you need a certain stress level to reach a certain level of performance. And it's only when you get too stressed that your performance starts to drop off. But the truth is, when you were completely relaxed but focused, not relaxed and uncaring, but relaxed and focused, that's when you performed at a level that you rarely get to any other time. Stress does not contribute to performance. A relaxed, focused state of mind does contribute to performance. Think about it in your own lives. Don't just take my word for it. Because, you know, people are out there in stress management world telling you there's such a thing as called eustress or good stress. You need to get stressed about something before you'll take action. Well, let me just run something by you. I'm your manager for a moment. I call a meeting and I've got a project I want you guys to make a start on and really get your teeth into. Should I say something along the lines of, okay, I want you to get some really good stress about this? No. How would that sound? But what if I said, hey guys, I've got some exciting news. You know, you'll probably get a sense of anticipation about this. This is going to be great. There's all these things we could achieve here. That's a very different perspective. And the irony is, the chemistry is largely the same, but it's reframed into a positive. And so that becomes energizing. Excitement is very different from being stressed. Anticipation is very different from being stressed. And most people don't know the difference. And I may be laboring the point here now, but I do want to emphasize this because people just don't seem to get this. If you really believe that stress is key to performance, run this scenario through. Let's say you've been in an accident of some kind and you're on a gurney and you're being wheeled into a hospital. You need an operation of some kind. and the anesthetist is just about to put the mask on you, and then you hear the surgeon, "Oh, I'm so stressed. There's so many things happening at once. There's too many things going on. I can't cope. All right, you nurse, I want you to do this, and I need this, and I need that." And you can tell that he's on edge. Are you going to relax back and say, "Thank goodness he's stressed. He'll do a great job"? Does that sound right to you? No, because at a deeper, unconscious level, you know you don't want your surgeon stressed. You want him totally, totally calm. You want him focused and relaxed and in charge. And that's how you should be when you want to perform. There's also this myth that we've never lived in a more stressful period of time. Well, let me run a few things by you. If that's the case, where and when would you rather live? Let's go back through history. In 1914, 1918, we had a world war. In 1918, 15 million people died of a flu epidemic. You know, in your grandparents' or great-grandparents' time, you might have 7 or 8 children, but you didn't expect all of them to survive. You lost children through tuberculosis, through polio, cholera, things that now are just a slight inconvenience, were killers back then. When would you rather live? At a time when people struggled to eat? When would you rather be? During the Depression, the 30s? Or would you rather be back at the time where there was the Cold War, where children were taught to hide under their desks in case there was a nuclear attack? That was the air raid drill. Hide under your desk. That would have been really effective. When would you rather live? You live in one of the greatest democracies in the world. You have more rights as an employee or as an individual than any other time in history. Better medical services. Things that even a few years ago were dangerous can be resolved with a simple little operation these days. When would you rather live? What other part of the world? Africa? Large chunks of Asia? Where would you rather be? A lot of what we deal with is nothing. Go to Cambodia and tell people how tough your life is here. It won't wash. Because it is only a perception. Most people in Cambodia would swap with you no matter how bad you think your life is here. Because they'd make something of it. They'd find a way of making something of it. I've never seen people so happy as when I was in Cambodia. And they've got nothing. They don't even know if they're going to eat tomorrow. But they're happy. So many of them have watched their entire families killed during the Pol Pot regime. But they've got resilience. They're mentally better equipped to deal with this stuff because it's just something they have to do. They are human, and if one human can do it, so can another. The only difference is the way you approach the world. As I said before, stress is a wholly internal process. So let's look at how you do stress. As I said to you, stress is a wholly internal process. Let's look at your particular methodology. Because stress or any emotional state is actually a process. It is a sequence of things you have to do together. Let's look at being happy. If you're happy, there are certain things you'll have to do to be happy. You'll have to run certain images and thoughts through your head. You can't imagine being happy and at the same time run something really negative through your head. It won't work that way. Your voice inside your head will probably be saying positive and joyous things. Your physiology will meet those thoughts by being more upright. You'll tend to smile. You'll tend to be light. Tension from the body will tend to drop. If you look at the way you do stress, my guess is that you run a negative thought through your head, usually projected in the future. So you imagine something going wrong. As you run that negative thought through your head, then you're probably running a negative commentary through your head too. Something along the lines of, it's all going to go pear-shaped, you know, they're going to be really angry, what do? I'll feel stuck, I'll feel trapped. Those sorts of thoughts. You're definitely not imagining yourself on a beach in Tahiti, because that just won't work. At the same time, your physiology will tend to crumple. Your shoulders will tend to lift and maybe come forward. You will tend to be less upright. You'll tend to lean over. You'll tend to shorten your breath. you may even start to get some tension through the stomach. So you might hold the stomach in a particular way so there's tension or a knot through there. Everyone's slightly different on this. But if you look at all the different things that you do, do it now. If you're able to, if you're not driving, remember a time when you were really, really tense, really stressed. Go back into that time, remember what that felt like. See what you saw, hear what you heard, feel what you felt. Really go back into it and notice what you have to do to go back into that state. Notice what you've done with your posture. Now, a way to get around this is to just challenge some of the things you do. So, for instance, if the voice is important to you, what would happen if you ran, say, the cartoon character's voice through your head? I don't know, it might be anyone from a Walt Disney character or Carmen from South Park or anything that you want. Or maybe you could even sing that negative commentary inside your head. Anything you do that is not the way you normally do stress will have a negative impact on that emotional state. Because your brain can't run it in a different way. It has to run it the way it likes to run it, the way it's always run it. If you are straight and right up and breathe easily, deeply into the stomach, nice, slow, deep breaths, what happens to that level of stress? If you were to lift your gaze above the horizon and still imagine the same thought, you can still have the same thought, but lift your gaze above the horizon and straighten up and breathe differently, slow and easy. And if you need to, if the commentary inside your head is strong, just change that to, Daffy Duck. What happens now? Can you do it the same way? Is it still as strong? Or does it kind of interfere with it? See, I don't even know what you're stressing about, but I know the moment you see it in a different way, the moment you process it differently inside your head, you can't do it the same way. You can't get the same level of stress. In a short space of time, you could learn to not do stress at all. I can't teach all that to you here. It's more like in a day I can do that. In a full day together, we could teach you how to be totally in charge of your responses. And part of that would be just teaching you how to ask different questions inside your head. For instance, one of the ways to stay in a problem is to ask certain types of questions. So something has gone wrong, let's say at work. If you're in your head, you ask things like, what went wrong? Why is this a problem? Who caused it? What caused it? Whose fault is it? You're going to tend to loop back into the problem. There is no solution in those questions. There's only stress in those questions. There's the, what am I going to do about this? You're only looking at the negative. You are looking at the avoidance. What's the problem? Why is this a problem? Who caused it? What caused it? But if you look at an outcome approach, a solution-focused approach, what if the first questions you asked yourself were, okay, what do I want from this situation? How do I get it? And what resources do I need? So something's gone wrong. Something won't be delivered on time. Okay, what do I want? And I like to ask, what's the best outcome I can get from here? That doesn't mean to say I can necessarily get the outcome that I originally planned. What's the best outcome I can get from here? From here, I can either send a faster courier. It might cost me a couple hundred dollars extra, but that will get me out of that problem. Or I can ring the client and find out which elements need to be delivered first and can we deliver the rest on the next day. There's all sorts of things I can do to resolve the issue. What do I want? How do I get it? What resources do I need? Do I need to pull some people off another job and have them come and help out? Do I need to go and get some training in a field? Do I need to throw some money at it? What is it that I need to do to resolve the problem? Because problems will happen. Problems will happen consistently. There's no point getting stressed about it. It's just to expect it. I find it hard to believe that people struggle with incompetence. The truth is, there's always going to be a certain level of incompetence with the people you work with. It's just going to happen. You have to know it. And if you just know it and accept it, then you can work with it. If you're always surprised by the fact that people don't do their job as well as you do, then you're going to struggle. You're going to stress about it. If you ask yourself better questions, then you will not suffer the way those who get caught up in the drama of the problem suffer. You know, Mark Twain once said something. He said, "I have lived a long life and seen a lot of hard times, most of which never happened." That's what most of us do. We got to take responsibility. And the way we do that is we stay positive, we stay solution focused. That way, stress just doesn't have a place. Because it's not personal. It doesn't matter. It's just a case of, what do I need to do now? If you spend your whole time thinking about, what will this mean to me? What will it mean? Will the client think less of me? Will my job be threatened? Wouldn't it be better if you just waited till something happened before you decided to be stressed about it? So my question would be, to follow the logic that you would be running if you're doing stress, how stressed would you need to get in order to assure a positive outcome? The answer is, of course, not at all, because it doesn't change anything external to you. It just creates a problem for you internally. Why not just devote that energy to problem solving, to solution-focused thinking, and move forward? It's not about skills. It's about attitude. There are people who have more resources than you. True. There are people who have higher skill sets than you. But that doesn't make them the top of the tree. If that was the case, then university professors would be the top of the tree. They would run the world. They do not. It's the people who are able to deal with the stresses and strains of life easily and effectively that run the world. You can be one of those people, if you're willing to change this. And as I said, I can't show you everything here, but hopefully at this point in time, you've developed, at least questioned, the more common and maybe your own view of stress to this point in time. You know, Viktor Frankl, who was a German-Jewish psychologist during World War II, he was interned in a German concentration camp. He suffered terribly at the hands of his captors. He decided that someone had to tell the story. Someone had to let the world know what was happening here. And he gave himself and his life meaning. He decided that he had to survive. He had to, because he was going to tell the story. And he chose not to hate his captors. He chose that ultimately they could control his body, but they would never actually control him, the person he was. And one of his quotes from the book he wrote, Man's Search for Meaning, one of the early books in the personal development field, was that man's last human freedom is the freedom to choose one's own reaction. You can do what you like to me, but you can't make me react in a particular way. I will choose how I will react. And ultimately, as the story goes, despite what they did to him, he was so physically well compared to the other inmates. When the Americans captured the camp, they suspected him of being a collaborator. Now, if this is possible in the deplorable conditions of a concentration camp, what can we do here in the modern world? The limitations we create for ourselves are all derived from fear. You are the center of a circle that knows no circumference. Now, you can choose to use and further explore what you've heard here, or not. The choice is yours. Mark Twain also said that the man who chooses not to read has no advantage over the man that cannot read. Ultimately, each of us makes a choice. Now, if you recognize that this approach is worth exploring further, and you want to empower your life in ways that you might have otherwise felt were not possible, go to our website. Look at what we can do for you. www.iht.net.au, or call us at the office on 02-9977-0779. We look forward to speaking to you. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.